Hello and welcome to IdeaGen TV, powered by Azure and presented globally by Microsoft. Today, we are very excited to welcome back onto IdeaGen TV, Suzanne McCormick, the U.S. President of United Way Worldwide. Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks, Christian. It's always good to be with IdeaGen. Really glad to be here.
We are thrilled to have you, Suzanne, and thank you so much for joining us and being a part of this incredible event. And I know that you have a wonderful power chat coming up. So with that, I will pass it on over to you and let you dive right in.
Thank you. Well, joining me today, it's my privilege to introduce one of my colleagues at United Way Worldwide, Edwin Gauthier. Edwin is our Vice President of Innovation for United Way Worldwide and one of the most amazing thinkers and strategists that I have ever met. So I think everyone's in for a real treat in my conversation with Edwin today. So Edwin, thanks for joining IdeaGen. This is your first time.
It is. A longtime fan, first time caller, but really excited to be here with you, Suzanne.
Great. Well, we're here to talk about innovation. And what I'd like to start with, it's for better or worse, it's kind of a three-part question. So first of all, tell us about your role at United Way Worldwide and the work that you lead. And then I think our viewers might be curious, what led you to this position and this work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I lead the innovation function at United Way Worldwide. That means supporting innovation for the United Way Worldwide organization and also facilitating or making innovation easier for our members in the global United Way network. So in short, our team exists to really reimagine what's possible for our 130-year-old nonprofit organization. Our focus areas are on social innovation. So how do we live out the improved lives part of our mission more effectively and more efficiently than we do today? Engagement innovation, which is how we support our supporters, the people who donate, volunteer, and advocate for United Way. And then finally, strategy innovation. So taking what we're learning from those first two focus areas and figuring out how that changes our business model. And United Way has a long history of innovation, everything from payroll deduction to the creation of outcome-based grant reporting in local communities. But our innovations have been kind of few and far between. And so our focus as a team is to make sure United Way has what it takes to be an organization that focuses on continuous innovation. And we do that by focusing on four main drivers of innovation. One is to equip innovators, give them the tools, the mindsets that they need to be innovative. Second is to create and test new solutions. And so just taking new ideas, de-risking them before we bring them to market. The third is to explore emerging technology and practices, just staying cutting edge, making sure we're exploring what we don't know that's out there in the world. And then finally, sharing what we learn in real time. So our team documents, we write case studies, and we push out everything that we're learning at United Way so it benefits other United Ways and the sector as a whole.
Wow, that's a lot. Really interesting. There's lots of places that I'm curious to explore more. But just from a personal perspective, what have you always been drawn to the realm of innovation? Tell us just a bit about your background so our viewers can, understand how did you get where you are today?
So I started working at United Way, a local United Way in Gainesville, Florida, right out of college. And it was only about 2 months in that I really fell in love with the organization, with the mission, and what was possible at United Way at that time. But I just kind of get bored easily. And so year after year, when I'm looking through the work planning process and I see, how do I do this one thing 2% better than I did it last year? That's never really super attractive to me. And so when I found innovation as a department where you can explore the white space and explore, the blue sky opportunities that could exist, that was super attractive to me. And so I've been part of the innovation team for 6 years and just took over the team about 2 years ago and have recently also added strategy to that body of work.
Thank you. So you opened up with, you know, you focus on sort of three kinds of innovation. You talked about social innovation, you talked about strategy innovation, and you talked about engagement innovation. I'm curious, as you've been in this work, can you share with us, I'm particularly interested in social innovation. Where have you seen some of the best social innovation? And it could be within United Way, United Way Worldwide, it could be with one of our local United Ways, or it could be in another nonprofit, just to help us understand, like, what does that look like?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are probably three great ingredients to innovation. One is being at the intersection of a problem that needs to be solved and new technology. And we see this with an organization that's actually 3D printing homes for the homeless. They're using 3D printing because it's so much cheaper and more efficient than the way that we build houses today. And that's a really incredible version of innovation that we see in our sector. The other two ingredients are things that I think are uniquely perfect for United Way. And that's a deep, deep understanding of the problem and a deep commitment to seeing the problem through and being part of the continuous improvement of the outcome. The reason why United Way is so good at those last two ingredients is because of our hyper-local context. You know, we're not just working in states or cities, but we're working in neighborhoods and villages and census tracts all around the United States and around the world. And that level of closeness and proximity, it's really important to being able to provide meaningful solutions. My favorite innovation from the network, or one of my favorites, it's a really simple one. There is a United Way in Chester County, Pennsylvania. And they realized that mobile homes in their community are taxed like houses, but actually depreciate in value like cars. And so a community of people who could least afford it were being wildly overtaxed on their property taxes. So they worked with community members that were living in the mobile homes to better understand the problem, to educate them on the issue. And they worked with mobilizing volunteers to have people do the property tax reassessments. And now that program has served 500 families in that community, and they've brought the assessed value of the homes of those 500 families from $18 million down to $5 million. So each family is saving on average $1,000 per year just on the property taxes that they would be paying. And you know, that's an incredible stimulus that you put back into the community, into people who could hardly afford the taxes that they were paying before. So I'm just really encouraged by that type of innovation that we're seeing in the nonprofit sector, but particularly in our network.
Wow, that is that's an incredible example. It's an incredible story. So one of the things I was thinking about is, I think sometimes there's this stereotype. Different people from different sectors have, you know, they have their own perceptions about the nonprofit sector, and even the human service sector. And I think probably my perception is part of that stereotype is that innovation isn't really alive and well in the nonprofit sector. How do you respond to that statement, Edwin? And I'm certainly not saying it's true, but how do you respond to that?
I think there are elements that are true, in that unfortunately for our sector, we don't have deep pockets. There are organizations that have, you know, operating reserves. In the for-profit sector, they have operating reserves that are like the size of a small country's GDP. And we don't even get the ability to carry over our dollars year after year without getting dinged on our audits. So we don't really have the resourcing to do innovation the way for-profit companies do. And so innovation does look very different in the nonprofit sector. The other challenge is scale. So when I talk to for-profit companies, their idea of scale is very different from what actually works in scaling social innovation in particular. And so if you think about an app that might start in a very niche way for a specific community, when that app goes to scale, they do one of two things. They either invest a bunch of capital and add a bunch of features so that now they can attract a bigger market, or they reduce the features and have like a lowest common denominator offering that isn't exactly as good for that original community, but will attract more people. For that tax assessment example that I just shared, you know, we don't have a bunch of money that we can invest in creating new features. And it was that hyper-local understanding of the tax code and so many other factors that made that valuable. And so creating a lowest common denominator offering just means that we're not really living up to our missions. So I think those are some of the challenges that I see when we talk between sectors about innovation and scaling what's working.
I agree with you. Sometimes it's an unfair standard for the nonprofit sector. You know, people who support nonprofits with, you know, their time and treasure, they insist that they be more efficient and more effective. And yet, as you said, not really allowed to use resources to do what you're trying to do, which is explore different ways to do things. So sometimes they sort of get stuck with having to do things just the same old way because they don't have the resources to invest in innovation. Which leads me to another question, Edwin, as I think about, so if they're, you know, it is true, nonprofits do operate with less resources than other sectors, and particularly the private sector. What are some of your imaginations about how the private sector could partner with nonprofits in innovation and innovative efforts?
Yeah, there are so many huge opportunities, and so many for-profit institutions are really getting serious about corporate purpose and wanting to make a difference in community. It's not just a department that focuses on social responsibility, but it's becoming part of their core mission as a company. I think what would be helpful is for nonprofits first to make sure we are investing in the shared infrastructure, shared capabilities that we would need to come to the table and be great partners. We actually don't have a lot of shared infrastructure between us as nonprofits. You know, maybe at best we have like the 990, we kind of just use that as like a tool to beat each other over the heads when someone pays their staff a living wage with like the cost of organizational spending. And so I think what we would really need to focus on is how do we come up with our internal infrastructure and capabilities that we need to then invite the for-profit sector to the table. I'll go back in time 100 years, give you a couple concrete examples of what I'm talking about. So about 100 years ago, a group of bankers got together and they decided the way that we're dealing with checks right now is just, it's bananas. You know, someone writes a check, you pray, and then maybe it ends up in the bank account a couple weeks later. And so this group of bankers from different institutions, they actually created the system of routing numbers, which helps us get money predictably from one person's account to the right branch and the right person. The concept of routing numbers was like the first big cross-sector innovation for finance. Around that same time, in the city of Baltimore was the Baltimore Fire. The Baltimore Fire created billions of dollars in damage in today's dollars. And it was so big that fire departments from neighboring cities, Washington, DC, Philadelphia even, came to Baltimore to help with the relief effort. But when they arrived in Baltimore, they realized the hoses that they were using didn't fit the casings on the fire hydrants. And so because they didn't have that shared infrastructure and shared understanding of how to, you know, be interoperable, how to work together, the city burned and these helpers that came just had to watch. So you fast forward 100 years and you still today, you look at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, all these competitors, they still have more shared infrastructure than we do at United Way and Catholic Charities and Goodwill when we're actually serving the same people. So if we can solve that challenge first, we're going to be much better partners once the for-profit companies come to the table.
That's a great example I was just seeing it, like I was seeing it in my head. Really, really great example. So Edwin, you talked about, you know, you and your team, you approach your work in supporting our network by doing four things. You're equipping, you're creating and testing, you're exploring emerging technologies, and you're sharing. Are there any one of those sort of four approaches or ways that your team does the work that you personally enjoy the most?
I think it's a tie between the actual creating and testing, because I think people tend to think about creating and testing new innovative solutions as going through the whole process of creating a pilot and a new program. And it's not. It's actually just going out and making a hypothesis about who your target customer is and talking to those people. And then you say, you know what, I was correct about my hypothesis, or I was totally wrong and I'm not going to do this anymore. So that really lean approach to creating a new solution is something that gets me like really excited. And it's kind of counter to the way we often operate in the nonprofit sector, where we create a big strategic plan. And before we even, before we share it with anyone that would be affected by it, we essentially are already building the solution. The other that I'd say is tied for first is us sharing what we're learning. And I really enjoy being able to not see our other nonprofit partners as competitors, and to be able to say, look, we tried this and it worked pretty well. There could be something if you change the context that would be valuable for you, or saying we tried this and it was terrible. And we don't want you to waste donor resources going down that path. And so we recently had sessions at South by Southwest where we were sharing some of the new things that we're learning. Our team creates case studies and viral videos to share the examples of the great stories that are happening in our network. And I'd say that's tied for my favorite part of what we do.
So to me, part of innovation, and you just touched on it in your first of the two things you do, like the creating and testing. You know, as you said, sometimes with testings, you can have an epic fail. And I'm a big believer that, you know, that's what, you know, innovation is about, you know, seeing what works and what doesn't work and, you know, learn from it. Do you have an epic fail you can share? Has there been any disaster in terms of your testing?
So we haven't had any huge failures, and even if a fail is epic, it's not necessarily bad to have that failure. The goal for us now is to get to failure faster than we would if we were going through a traditional process. But you know, just two examples that come to mind of things that failed and that we said, okay, great, and we moved on. One very small. We have an innovation newsletter, and we were having a debate on our team, and I was certain that if we had a consistent subject line for our newsletter, it would create better open rates because the reader would always know what was coming into their inbox. And so we ran an A/B test, and we split our audience in half for 3 months. And month after month, my hypothesis failed. And Pauline Ng, who is an incredible creative person on my team, her subject lines won every single time. And so I let it go. My opinion was not as good as the data that we actually had in hand. And then the second was we were exploring through a program that we have called Ride United Last Mile Delivery. We were exploring lots of new ways to fund and finance the program last year, including government funding opportunities and new foundation relationships. And we went through a very long process, probably about a four-month engagement with a full-time person on my team dedicated to that work. And we weren't able to come up with the funding. We got a lot of great learning about future opportunities with contractors, with federal funding opportunities that we didn't know about, but we weren't able to make that work. And so, you know, a supervisor can say one of two things: either one, that was a waste of time for me to put staff person on that project for 4 months if we didn't get to the end result we wanted, or two, it was incredibly worth it for us to go down this path, to know what's not an option anymore, and to know what's still strategically in play for us. And so I lean toward the latter.
Well, Edwin, I've always admired your leadership, and I think that's that ability to say that you made a mistake, I think certainly in a leader who's leading innovation, is just hugely important. And I know that it's appreciated. So I think our time's we're getting close to the end. So I want to have two final questions. One is more personal, and then one is around, you know, your advice for the sector. But do you have a personal passion or personal issue that you would really love to see solved through social innovation? And if so, what is that?
Absolutely. For me, it goes back to that shared infrastructure that we need as a sector. So I know that's kind of wonky. Most people would say little kids or puppies. I'm a wonky guy. I'm an infrastructure guy. So if we can solve that challenge, what we unlock for ourselves and for the people we serve, it's not having to repeat your story to 6-7 nonprofit organizations. It's having us all having access to incredible data on what solutions are actually working and moving people along. It's creating predictable pathways and journeys for the people that we serve, not just within our organization, but across all the partners in a local community. And so if we can figure that out, it is an incredible opportunity for how we think about the delivery of social services in the United States. And I have to say, that's the reason why I get out of bed every single day. And to be at United Way, where we invest billions of dollars into local nonprofits, to rethink what that could mean in the context of having that shared infrastructure and being able to support nonprofits and the people that we serve in a different way, it'll keep getting me out of bed for a while.
That's incredible. Very inspiring. So this is the last question, and if you had any advice for nonprofit leaders around innovation, which actually might help lead to the achievement of your vision, what would that advice be, Edwin?
Yeah, I would leave you with these three ideas. The first is for that vision, or for any cross sector or within our sector innovation to happen, it's going to require people to engage and be at the table. So once these conversations start, and I believe that these conversations are right around the corner for nonprofits, it'll be important for everyone to engage, to make their voice heard, to make sure that we as a sector are shaping solutions, and that we're not just leaving it to a few for-profit entities to make decisions on our behalf. So use your voice as a nonprofit and join that conversation. The second, within your organization, you know, if I were CEO of a nonprofit, I would say at least 1%, that's it. Just 1% of the money that I'm spending this year is going to go towards innovation, and 1% of my staff time is going to go towards innovation. So your staff has about 2,000 hours in a year. Put 20 hours of that towards innovation and letting them do things that would change the way you do the work, and not just the work that you do. You know, that example from Chester County with the mobile homes, their board gave them $7,500 to lead that project. And that $7,500 unlocks $500,000 a year in tax revenue. That's an incredible return on investment. And so if we can continue to think about like these minimal investments that could be put towards a big swing, and also won't send our finance committees running for the hills, I think that's probably a good win. And then the last is, we're never going to have the resources to do innovation, the way Google or Microsoft or others do. And so for us on our team, we're trying to make United Way into the platform for those companies to come to the table and innovate with United Way. So we just led a huge crowdsourcing campaign last year called Invisible Problems, where we went into the community and asked, can you share some of the problems related to the pandemic that might not be making it onto the news or, beyond just the number of cases and the lost jobs. And we've got really interesting problems around people's ability to vote safely. And this was way before the rest of the country was having that conversation. We got interesting challenges around access to healthcare, and really that sourcing of problems was incredible, but there wasn't enough capacity on our team to be able to do something with all 200 submissions that we received. And so we partnered with Deloitte, one of the big four consulting firms, and we hosted something called the Designathon, where we invited their employees to help us solve the invisible problems that we brought to them. We let them pick a few that were aligned to their corporate responsibility agenda, and gave them only 2 weeks to come up with solutions that our team is now going to take on and test. Of the three teams that presented, they were absolutely incredible concepts, great pitches. Probably, future startup CEOs, every single person that participated. But we have a concept now that we're going to be incubating over the next few months. And it's only because we invited these diverse thinkers from our corporate partner to just be at the table and innovate with us. So the more you can turn yourself into a platform and use your expertise and understanding the problem and how you engage volunteers, I think the better off you'll be.
Thanks, Edwin. Wow. Again, you're so inspiring. I mean, I'm lucky that I get to work with you, but I've learned new things from you even in just this, 20 minutes together. So thank you for that. I'm sure you will have inspired others and really appreciate how you've challenged my thinking, and I'm sure the thinking of our viewers here at the Innovation Summit. So thank you for joining me, and I hope we can be together again at another IdeaGen event. So thanks, Edwin.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it.